Good evening. The ambassador testifies. What was Trump's agenda in Ukraine? Weighing the odds on impeaching Trump and the latest on the Pacifica Radio Network. With these and other stories, I'm Paul D'Arienzo with some of the news for Friday, November 15, 2019. A federal jury on Friday convicted Trump confidant Roger Stone of lying to Congress and tampering with a witness regarding his efforts to learn about WikiLeaks' release of hacked Democratic emails in the 2016 election. Nine women and three men deliberated for less than 2 days before finding Stone 67 guilty. He faces a maximum of 50 years on seven counts, resulting from his September 2017 testimony to a House Intelligence Committee investigation of Russian interference in the election. Stone watched impassively as the verdict was read, frowning as he left the courtroom. Stone's indictment was the last brought by Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller, revealing important new details about the Trump campaign's keen interest in computer files made public by WikiLeaks. Stone joined several Trump advisors and confidants who were either convicted or pleaded guilty in connection with the special counsel probe. Those include former Trump campaign chairman Paul Manafort, former Trump Deputy Campaign Chairman Rick Gates, former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen, and former Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos. Trump responded to the verdict by singling out a bevy of his political enemies in a tweet, quote, "So now they convict Roger Stone of lying and want to jail him for many years to come. Well, what about crooked Hillary, Comey, Sturzok, Page, McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Shifty Schiff, Orr and Nelly, Steele and all the rest and all the others, including even Mueller himself? Didn't they lie?" Trump then tweeted, "A double standard like never seen before in the history of our country." Stone didn't testify during the trial, but jurors saw videos of his television appearances and heard scratchy audio of his appearance before the House committee. Jurors also saw texts where Stone used vulgarity and threats to pressure comedian and former WBAI host Randy Credico to back up his version. "You are a rat, a stoolie," he wrote, "prepare to die." Former Trump chief strategist Steve Bannon told jurors, "Roger is an agent provocateur. Trump was such a long shot," Bannon added, "the campaign had to use every tool in the toolbox." And now to Jesse Lentz, who has our report on today's impeachment hearings. Welcome, Jesse.
Hi, Paul. Great to talk to you.
What stood out in today's hearings?
There was one moment that everyone is sure to be discussing in their roundups tonight about how the second round of impeachment hearings went. That is President Trump, in what I think it's safe to say is a first in U.S. history, live tweeting the impeachment hearing. House Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff interrupted Friday's questioning of former Ukraine Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch to ask her to respond to one of the president's statements about her on Twitter in real time. I think we have some footage of that.
Ambassador Yovanovitch, as we sit here testifying, the president is attacking you on Twitter. And I'd like to give you a chance to respond. I'll read part of one of his tweets. "Everywhere Marie Yovanovitch went turned bad. She started off in Somalia. How did that go?" He goes on to say later in the tweet, "Is a U.S. president's absolute right to appoint ambassadors." First of all, Ambassador Yovanovitch, the Senate has a chance to confirm or deny an ambassador, do they not?
Yes, advise and consent.
But would you like to respond to the president's attack that everywhere you went turned bad?
Well, I don't think I have such powers, not in Mogadishu, Somalia, not in other places. I actually think that where I've served over the years, I and others have demonstrably made things better.
That exchange also led to one of the more powerful moments of the impeachment hearing so far, when former Ambassador Yovanovitch admitted she felt intimidated by President Trump, telling the Ukrainian president she was going to, quote, go through some things when she saw the transcript of a July 29th phone call between the two world leaders.
The president implicitly threatened you in that call record. And now the president in real time is attacking you. What effect do you think that has on other witnesses' willingness to come forward and expose wrongdoing?
Well, it's very intimidating.
It's designed to intimidate, is it not?
I mean, I can't speak to what the president is trying to do, but I think the effect is to be intimidating.
So what about the Republicans? Was there a new strategy on day two?
Well, Republican members of the House Intelligence Committee, led by Jim Jordan of Ohio, continued to attack the process and to assert that it was fully within the president's right to fire an ambassador, echoing the president's own words on Twitter. Jordan was, of course, taken away from his usual role as the ranking member of the House Oversight Committee, reportedly because the president favors his prosecutorial style in these type of hearings. And so he was added to the House Intelligence Committee for the duration of these impeachment hearings. Republicans on the committee looked a little stifled by the rules the Democratic-led House passed for how the hearings can proceed, but still pressed on with attempting to paint the Democrats as conducting impeachment in secret, with ranking member Congressman Devin Nunes of California again starting the day, starting at least his portion of the hearings, and he gets to give the opening statement in this format along with Chairman Schiff, referring to the, quote, cult-like impeachment hearings happening in the Capitol, in the basement. This is, of course, just where the hearing room happens to be. It's in the basement. And Congressman Jordan calling out Chairman Schiff for not releasing all of the transcripts from the private hearings so far.
The chairman has promised we'll get to see the transcripts, but there's still four people we've deposed that we have not been able to use to see their transcripts, have their transcripts released, and therefore the testimony they provided, we're not able to use in these open hearings. If it's an open hearing, all the available testimony from depositions that has been taken by the committee should be available to be discussed for the American people to see. But no, no, no. Mr. Morrison, Mr. Hale, and Ms. Williams, two others have, and another one, have not yet been released. So I hope the chairman releases that one.
So what do we have coming up for next week?
Well, Paul, there is a full block of hearings scheduled next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, including testimony from Gordon Sondland, ambassador to the EU, who is one of the so-called three amigos who allegedly offered President Trump an alternate channel for Ukraine strategy. Now, since Sondland and a couple other of the witnesses next week are going to be closer to Trump, it's going to be difficult for the Republicans to continue to say that no one testifying had any direct contact with the president, that this is hearsay. Sondland, certainly someone who is very involved with these negotiations with the Ukrainian president to dig up some dirt, as the allegations go, on former Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter, in order for him to release almost $400 million in military aid.
Thank you very much, Jesse Len, for joining us.
Thank you.
Speaking after the conclusion of today's hearings, Trump accused the press of ignoring statements made by Ukraine officials, saying there was no connection between Trump's call to President Zelensky and pressure to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter for alleged corruption. Trump also denied his tweet during the testimony was witness tampering as charged by committee chair Adam Schiff.
About transparency?
Well,
no, I'll talk about transparency. I like transparency here, and I'm the most transparent president in history. And I'll tell you about what tampering is. Tampering is when a guy like Shifty Shift doesn't let us have lawyers. Tampering is when Schiff doesn't let us have witnesses, doesn't let us speak. I've been watching today for the first time. I started watching, and it's really sad when you see people not allowed to ask questions. It's totally, nobody's ever had such horrible due process. There was no due process. And I think it's considered a joke all over Washington and all over the world. The Republicans are given no due process whatsoever. We're not allowed to do anything. It's a disgrace what's happening. But you know what? The American public understands it. And that's why the poll numbers are so good. And that's why other things are so good. What they're doing in Washington with that hearing. And by the way, it's a political process. It's not a legal process. So if I have somebody saying I'm allowed to speak up, if somebody says about me, we're not allowed to have any kind of representation, we're not allowed to have almost anything, and nobody's seen anything like it. In the history of our country, there has never been a disgrace like what's going on right now. So you know what? I have the right to speak. I have freedom of speech, just as other people do. but they've taken away the Republicans' rights. And I watched today as certain very talented people wanted to ask questions, and they weren't even allowed to ask questions. Republicans, they weren't allowed to ask questions. It's a very sad thing.
Why would you attack?
Go ahead.
Start with your freedom. Start with your freedom. Were you trying to intimidate Ambassador Yovanovitch?
I just want to have a total. I want freedom of speech. That's a political process. The Republicans have been treated very badly. And I watched a little bit of it today. I wasn't able to yesterday because we had the president of Turkey here, and I wasn't able to watch much. I watched some of it this morning. I thought it was a disgrace. When we have great Republican representatives, people elected by the people, and they're not allowed to even ask a question, they're not allowed to make a statement, we're not allowed to have witnesses, we're not allowed to have legal counsel, White House counsel, it's a disgrace and it's an embarrassment to our nation.
Do you believe your police and your words?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Sir, do you believe your police and words can be intimidating?
I don't think so at all. Go ahead.
Mr. President, do you think you're going to get impeached?
Well, I shouldn't be. In fact, I thought last night it ended, because last night I was in Louisiana, where we're going to hopefully elect a great governor, Republican governor. And I was getting off the plane, and they handed me a statement that was just made by the foreign minister and president of the Ukraine. And Ukraine, they came out loud and clear that there was no linkage whatsoever, not even a little bit. And you saw it. You all saw it. I said, oh, well, that ends the impeachment. And you people don't even report it. Look, the press is unbelievably dishonest. That was a major statement put out last night by the foreign minister of Ukraine and also by the president of Ukraine. And you don't even report it. It's a disgrace, because it said there was absolutely no linkage. We had a perfect conversation. And I also, because of transparency, whether it's medical transparency or just transparency generally, I also put out today a statement. And in the statement, we released, and then Congressman Nunes read a call that I had with the president of Ukraine, and it was a great call. It was a very nice call. Everybody said it was perfect, I always say. It was equally as good as the other call. And I put it out today, and nobody even wants to report it because it was so good they don't want to report it. Look, if we had an honest press in this country, we would be so well served. And you know what? When I look at your approval numbers, they're the worst they've ever been in the history of our country. The media, the approval numbers, they are horrible. And you ought to get yourself back, and you ought to put yourself back in a position where people respect the media again. And I know some great journalists, I know some great people in the media, but there aren't enough of them. There's a lot of dishonesty, and many of you I just consider members of the Democrats, and it's a shame. Okay, thank you all very much.
During a recess in today's testimony, which was carried in its entirety on WBAI, the author of The Russians Are Coming Again, The First Cold War is Tragedy, The Second is Farce, Jeremy Kuzmarov, discussed Biden's role in Ukraine with WBAI's Linda Perry.
And so, Jeremy, what do you think about this, about Biden and Biden's son? And do you think this is just a big smokescreen? What is your opinion on that?
My opinion is that it was very corrupt on Biden's part, and that it was profiteering, almost like a form of war profiteering, because Biden was an instrumental figure in the coup d'etat that occurred in 2014 that ousted the pro-Russian leader. And then 3 months later, his son is being appointed to the board of this major oil and gas company when he has no experience. And he's obviously using his political connections, and he's benefiting off the coup that occurred. So it's all very shady. And then, you know, Biden clearly was trying to fire this, you know, withhold. I mean, that was a clear case of blackmail, where he was threatening to withhold huge amount of aid to Ukraine to ensure that this prosecutor, who is prosecuting the major director of that company, this oligarch named Zlochevsky, and actually I think he'd even seized some of Zlochevsky's property. He was the major owner of Burisma, and he was up to his knees in corruption. And he was, you know, the Ukrainian government was moving in on Zlochevsky, and Biden helped to remove that prosecutor. So that's all very shady and very, you know, smacks of influence peddling. And, you know, Biden was a key point man for the Obama administration on Ukraine. and that his son was, you know, a huge profiteer off that is, I think, definitely immoral. I don't know what laws were violated. I'm not a lawyer, but it's certainly unethical, and it's something the American public should be aghast about.
What is the corruption about in Ukraine? What exactly is being bought and sold there?
Ukraine has had a corrupt government since it separated from the Soviet Union in 1991. There's been systematic corruption. I mean, we fear here in the United States our country is becoming more of an oligarchy, and Ukraine essentially was has been an oligarchy. There are a number of warlords who are just dominate the economy and can buy politicians. Even the current leader, Zelensky, is funded heavily by a warlord named Ihor Kolomoisky, who owned major telecommunications firms and was a billionaire. He was financing a lot of the dirty war in Ukraine, although now he's actually turning more towards Russia. But these oligarchs have been dominant in Ukraine, and some have connections to organized crime. So it's just been a milieu of corruption for many years. But when the United States backed this coup, the regime that they brought in was especially corrupt, even by Ukraine standards. And what I was discussing, like what Biden was doing to threaten this prosecutor who was going after an oligarch who had engaged in some, it looks like, some definitely some unethical and probably illegal activity, and got him fired. I mean, that's really very shady.
Mm-hmm. And why do you think, though, that Donald Trump would have gone through these back channels to expose what was going on when what you're saying seems to be clear?
Yeah, I mean, it was written in the New York Times. In May, the New York Times had a front-page piece about how I think Biden even bragged about how he helped to remove this prosecutor, and he was threatening to withhold the foreign aid as much as $1 billion. So it really was out in the open. I don't think Trump really had to go to these lengths. Probably there are still more we can learn about it, and, you know, there may be some back dealings of Biden and his son that we don't know about.
Jeremy Kuzmarov is the author of The Russians Are Coming Again, The First Cold War's Tragedy, The Second as Farce. And you're listening to the news on WBAI, listener-sponsored, locally produced, and independent radio in New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. Author and former death penalty attorney Bill Blum has been watching the hearings. He says throughout the impeachment investigation, Trump has been his own worst enemy.
I think he's in massive trouble from an objective legal perspective. I think that he is now implicated for the crimes of bribery, extortion, and solicitation of foreign intervention in the upcoming 2020 election.
What do you think? What struck you in what you've heard so far in the hearings is most damning evidence?
The most damning part of the case that Democrats are building comes from the July 25 rough transcript of the telephone conversation between President Trump and President Zelensky. That transcript has been called perfect by President Trump, so he can't criticize the content of the transcript. And in fact, he's going around the country saying, read the transcript. Well, I've read the transcript, and the transcript sets out a very explicit quid pro quo. And all the Republicans can do is try to complicate the narrative, and they are not succeeding in doing that. You know, all of this testimony on the first day, the Republican attack line was, well, when did Zelensky know that the aid was being held up or suspended? That's a complete red herring. The truth is, and it's undisputed, Zelensky wanted military aid, whether he knew that there was a hold or whether he thought that he was going after an initial appropriation. He wanted military aid. Donald Trump says, but do us a favor, though, investigate the 2016 election and investigate the Bidens. And Zelensky says, okay, I will do those investigations for you, Mr. President. That's quid pro quo. That's a solicitation. That's a bribe. The bribe doesn't have to be paid off. That's federal law. All you have to do is look at the federal bribery statute. Soliciting a bribe makes you guilty of bribery. So I think that the president is in hot water. Also, now we know that there's a July 26 cell phone conversation, a reckless conversation between Trump and Sondland, in which Trump reiterates that his primary purpose is to take down the Bidens. So I think the president's in big trouble. And now this morning, during Yovanovitch's testimony, Trump is live tweeting, impugning her reputation, which is an act of witness intimidation, which is also illegal. It's a form of obstruction of justice. So I think you have an unhinged president, and the only question is, will some Republicans be brave enough to acknowledge that and to vote in favor of impeachment? That's a big unknown. But I think that legally and speaking objectively, this president is in grave danger.
Now, Roger Stone was convicted of all counts today. He for lying to Congress, and his role was allegedly the connection between the Trump campaign and Julian Assange, who is alleged to have provided at least some of these incriminating emails or interceptions. Do you know, have you been following that? What is the Stone case?
Yeah, I have been. This is also very bad for Donald Trump. What is Trump going to do now? Is he going to pardon Stone? If he pardons Stone, that's an admission of guilt in and of itself. You don't pardon somebody who you think is hasn't been involved in wrongdoing. A jury has convicted Stone on all seven counts. You know, it wasn't clear that he would be convicted or that he would be convicted on everything, but he has been. That's devastating for Donald Trump. I don't know what the truth is about WikiLeaks. I'd love to learn someday, but we know that Roger Stone lied to Congress about who his intermediary was with WikiLeaks and whether he had text messages and emails relating to that subject. So Roger Stone has gone down. Roger Stone's in big, big trouble. He's an elderly person. Now he faces a long prison sentence. It seems that everyone who deals with Donald Trump gets dirty, and that Trump is being exposed more and more as operating in the fashion, as I wrote in my last column, of an Al Capone, of a mobster.
What do you think the Senate's going to do?
I think the Senate will hold a trial. They're deliberating. The Republicans are deliberating on whether to hold a long trial to harm Democratic Senate candidates who are running for president, because they have to be present during the impeachment trial, or whether to hold a short trial and just dismiss the articles of impeachment that are sent over by the House. I expect that the Senate will not convict Donald Trump and will not remove him. But I think that depending upon how the trial is presented by the Democratic House managers, that impeachment trial is going to be severely damaging to Donald Trump and will hinder his reelection prospects. I don't think that they will aid those prospects.
Author and former death penalty attorney Bill Blum. And in international news, Iraqi security forces fired live ammunition and tear gas in renewed clashes with anti-government protesters in central Baghdad on Friday, killing three people, while Iraq's top Shiite religious leader warned its government to heed calls for sweeping political reforms. Separately, a bomb placed under a car exploded near a central square, killing two protesters and wounding 10 others, police and hospital officials said. They said the blast, which damaged several cars in the area, occurred between Tehran and Tahrir Squares, the latter being the epicenter of anti-government protests in the capital. It was the first such incident in the capital since the demonstrations began in early October, although it was not immediately clear whether the explosion targeted the protesters. Earlier, protesters repeatedly regrouped from under clouds of tear gas as they fought to tear down a concrete wall blocking access to Kalani Square. Security forces erected the barrier to keep the demonstrators from crossing a bridge that leads to the fortified Green Zone, the seat of government and many foreign embassies. And finally, as many listening may know, WBAI was taken off the air in early October by a faction of the Pacifica National Board. The Berkeley-based foundation holds the broadcast license for WBAI and four other stations, KPFA in Berkeley, KPFK in Los Angeles, KPFT in Houston, WPFW in Washington, D.C., and WBAI here in New York. The surprise move involved the trash smashing of WBAI's facilities, the theft of key broadcast equipment, and seizure of WBAI's bank accounts. The response was quick, with protests, public meetings, and lawsuits in federal and state courts. Finally, after a win in a New York state court, Judge Melissa Crane ordered WBAI back on the air and returned to its staff. On Thursday night, the Pacifica executive director responsible for the takeover, John Verniel, was fired by a majority vote of the Pacifica National Board. Board member Alex Steinberg had this to say.
I'm a member of the WBAI local station board and also a member of the Pacifica National Board, and I'm on that body. I'm the chair of the strategic planning committee of the Pacifica National Board.
And what is the Pacifica National Board?
The Pacifica National Board are the actual board of directors that are at the head of the governance of the Pacifica Foundation. The Pacifica Foundation is the licensee of WBAI Radio, as well as four other radio stations throughout the country.
And so there was some big news affecting WBAI last night at the Pacifica National Board meeting.
Last night, in closed session, the Pacifica National Board terminated Mr. John Verniel as the interim executive director of Pacifica.
Why is that significant?
It's significant insofar as Mr. Verniel, without any authority from the Pacifica National Board, shut down WBAI on October 7th.
How did it come to this?
That's a long story. But sufficient to say that a majority of the Pacifica National Board did not go along with the shutdown of WBAI, and they voted to restore WBAI on October 13th and October 20th. They also voted at that time to suspend Mr. Verniel as the interim executive director.
Why did it take so long for the board, if it has this governing power, to actually follow through on its actions?
That's a good question. I don't think I can really give you a good answer. Let's just say that things were going on in court while this was all happening. There was a lawsuit filed on behalf of those who wanted to restore WBAI that began actually on the same day as it was shut down, on October 7th, under the guidance of legal counsel Arthur Schwartz. We actually won an injunction, a final injunction. Well, it's not yet final, but it will be final shortly, from Judge Melissa Crane in State Supreme Court on November 5th. We were actually back on the air on midnight November 5th. However, much of our ties to our accounting, bank, our software, our website was still disabled. I know that our general manager and other staff and technical staff have been working very hard to restore all those operations. I believe everything is now working. And in the meantime, the Pacifica board has been involved in various internecine discussions, and you could say battles. And the result at this point was the termination of John Verniel as of yesterday.
So now who's in charge of Pacifica?
At the moment, the pro tem chair is, according to California corporate law, the interim executive director. That's Mr. Lawrence Reyes, who's pro tem chair of the Pacifica National Board, and he's from the Los Angeles station KPFK. We are having a continuation meeting of the Pacifica National Board Sunday evening, at which time we will be looking for a more longer term solution.
Anything like that?
No, that's pretty much it for now.
Are you considering me for the job?
Well, I'll put your name in the ring.
I have as good a chance as any now. Only kidding. Pacifica National Board member Alex Steinberg. And that's some of the news for Friday, November 15th, 2019. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Jesse Lent. Our engineers today are Ken Gale and Reggie Johnson.